Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Hi, welcome to a beautiful Thursday afternoon in the city of Chicago. Steve Bertrand in the Allstate Skyline Studio, sitting high above the Chicago River as summer makes its first knock on the door. Boy, it's a beautiful day this week. Today was as well yesterday. You know, Dennis Rodkin will be here from Cranes a little bit later talking about home sales. It's the same story, home sales lagging in Chicago, but we are buying more stuff. Consumer sales actually went up, and we'll talk to Amy Guth about that a little bit later. I did not realize until I was looking at some of the charts, we spend more on our cars, automotive and gas, than we do at the grocery store or at restaurants or even at the Walgreens, places like that. We'll talk to Amy Guth about where we spend our money and the fact that we're spending a little bit more of it in the Chicago area coming up in the second half hour of the program. But we get things started with Ian Schur, who, Ian, look up. I think there's a Chinese drone spying on our conversation.
Well, hopefully not, but it's possible. This is such a wacky story. So, you know, we've been hearing the U.S. government escalating its threats and lists of complaints about Chinese technology. And they were already complaining about Huawei, which is this Chinese networking company, and saying that their stuff was insecure. By the way, we're also fighting a trade war with China, so maybe something was going on there. Now we're hearing that the U.S. government is saying that drones may be a security threat, that they might have software in them when they connect to Wi-Fi that hacks into our systems, which is just nutty to think about, but also really scary.
I should say Ian Schur is a senior editor at CNET.com, and we're talking about a story written by Corinne Reichardt. Right, so what they're saying is if we hire these drones, what, to take pictures of our business or the kids' Little League game or whatever, that they might also be doing other things?
Yeah, and look, I mean, the thing that's interesting about this, and this gets to, like, if you want to become scared of everything, one of the things that you have to keep in mind is that everything today is a computer, right? There's literally software. There are actually multiple computers in your car. There are computers running our homes. There's computers in our friggin' refrigerators nowadays. So, like, the thing is that because they're all computers, they have software in them, and software is fallible. It's hackable. And suddenly we end up in this situation where someone can get access to it. It could be dangerous, particularly a government that's not happy with us.
You know,
I think that's what's we're talking about here.
I'm looking at a picture of the drone at CNET.com, and it does look like a black helicopter, a little black helicopter. But
these drones are very popular, though. They are used by corporations. They're used by Hollywood, and that's part of it, too, right?
Okay,
this is not
okay.
Just, you know, a bunch of nerdy guys flying a drone. Like, they're on these corporate networks, and they could be hacking in there.
So what do we do with this information?
I have no idea. I honestly, like, it's very unusual for me not to have an answer for you. I think what's interesting is that, first off, the government still hasn't actually given us a real list of examples and proof that we need to be worried about this stuff. It just keeps being these warnings, these vague threats that something's a danger. And it's getting a little out of control to get this list of stuff we can't trust all the time. And, you know, there's 5G networking we can't trust all of a sudden. The U.S. government at one point was considering nationalizing a 5G network to keep it secure. Like, there's this massive stuff being talked about, but no proof about it. And I think a lot of people are thinking, well, I don't know, right? We're still buying drones. It's not off of Amazon yet. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, you're talking about the 5G, right? That has to do with the Huawei story that the Trump administration blackballed one day and then unblackballed the next.
Yeah, and this is part of it, too, right, is that that at one point earlier this week, which, you know, some experts, by the way, have called the start of the new Cold War between the United States and China, the government started actually trying to cut off companies coming into the U.S. that were made. I mean, Huawei is a huge company, and they blackballed them. Google had to cut off ties with them and a bunch of other stuff. And then the government reversed it, and it's just become very weird. And it doesn't. There's no consistent messaging coming. And I'm not criticizing the government because of politics here. It's more about just trying to figure out what the heck is going on.
They literally did reverse it, or they didn't really reverse it, right? They just put it in place, and then they stayed it for a few months or something.
Exactly, right? So, in fact, Google then turned around and said, well, we'll work with Huawei for a while. But if it was a real threat, why would you do that? So I just don't understand.
Yeah, okay, so there's that. While we're talking about Google, I was afraid Google Glass was gone forever, and it turns out it's just sort of gone underground.
In a way. Well, it above ground in the enterprise world. So what's interesting here is that, you know, Google realized after all of the very negative backlash that existed, and we wrote about it on CNET plenty, right?
Yeah.
The weirdos who were on the street walking around with them, is that, you know, one of the things that really caught on was in the business world. And you have to think about, you know, there's a lot of people who don't sit in front of computers, right? They're on oil rigs, or they're in refinery pipelines, or they're out in the fields, farmers and stuff like that, who need access to information but can't carry around a computer. And this is where this type of technology is very beneficial for them.
So is it up and running and actually it's paying off for them in that way?
Yeah. I mean, look, there are a number of companies who say that they're really benefiting from it. A lot of times it's about messaging other, you know, employees who are working on a production line, or giving them access to a schematic very quickly instead of having to dig through a book. And it's very smart stuff. And by the way, Google's not alone. Microsoft's doing this. Intel is doing this. A bunch of people are trying this stuff. So there is traction. It's really fascinating.
All right. So I want to talk as well about Xbox, because Xbox is truly one of those things I know absolutely nothing about. Surprised to read that there are 63 million people who use Xbox every day or close to every day. And they're talking about making it sort of a safe place for people to play, which is controversial, right? Because the people who want to mouth off are saying they can't mouth off as much anymore.
Right. I mean, that's a very basic way to put it. Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that, you know, for the longest time, I think the gaming industry has had this really bad history of being seen as kind of a toxic place, right? And
it came up, was it South by Southwest, right? It was a major issue one year.
There it was, and it was a major issue on the internet. I mean, it caused a lot of trouble. There were death threats and all sorts of stuff. So what's interesting is that Microsoft is starting to increasingly kind of push its idea of what they think the gamer culture should be. And what they keep talking about is making it far more inclusive, right? They don't want it just to be the angry guys in the basement that's the stereotype. They want it to be for people who are disabled. So they created a special controller for people who don't even have hands, or some people who are quadriplegic. It's amazing. I wrote about it on CNET. And then what they're doing now is that they're starting to push on social issues, right? They're doing a lot what we want Facebook and Twitter to do, where they're saying, look, you can't talk racist smack about people. You can't harass them. You can't attack them. And they're basically setting up rules where they say, if you do this stuff, you're banned from our network. We don't care about what you're trying to do. It's not okay anymore. Well, and I think that's really fascinating.
Good for them. I hope they're able to corral that. Ian Schur, a senior editor at CNET.com. Thanks for joining us, Ian. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Bill Geiger is in the studio. Our conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management, Chicago's retirement planning experts. Bill, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Nice to be here, sir. Good to see you again.
Thanks for bringing summer with you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, we try.
Sunny summer smiles, right? That's what we get when we find out we've saved enough for retirement, and that's what you do, right? People come in, come up with retirement plans for you.
Well, they've basically done the savings part.
Right. And so what is it when you sit down with people that is the most important thing that you come up with first?
The big picture is we help them put together a complete full-blown plan for their retirement. But one of the most important parts of that plan, Steve, is the plan that they have for their income, their retirement income plan. I mean, if you stop working, you stop getting paychecks.
Right. And we've talked about this
for the rest of your life.
It's one of those things where, you know, it makes perfect sense when you stop to think about it. But if you don't, it doesn't. And the idea is that you're not just saving for retirement, you're planning for retirement and how you're going to get paid through your retirement.
Yeah. I mean, how do you replace those paychecks? And Social Security goes a little bit of the way. But how do you bridge the gap between Social Security and what your lifestyle really costs, the way that you want to live? And that's a big part of our planning process with folks.
Another part is
how to figure that out.
I was going to say, too, you have to figure it out in a way to where you're getting that income in a way that's not going to, you're not going to run out of money, right? Because once I get there, I can only imagine how miserable I would be if I was always worried about what's going to happen at the end.
And you're
I can worry
right.
enough about the other part of the end. I don't want to run out of money, too.
Yeah. And the biggest fear in the back of people's minds, and Steve, it doesn't matter how much money you have, because generally you have a lot of money, you have a lifestyle that maybe is bigger than normal. And the number one concern about folks is am I going to have enough to live the way I want to throughout my life and not run out of money?
Right.
All right. And so we make we do a lot of work in terms of figuring out what people's lifestyle actually costs, what they're going to have come in that's dependable, sustainable. Maybe it's Social Security's, maybe it's a small pension or whatever. And then the difference between those two numbers, what makes the difference between subsistence living and living comfortably, how do we create that income and how much is it going to take, especially considering inflation? How do you create that? How much is it going to take? And then put a plan into place so that that happens. It's probably the most important thing that we do.
What have you found when it comes to, because, you know, you see models where 80% of your current income, you should save for, or 60 or 75, whatever. What have you found is in practice retirees actually spend when it comes to their income?
They spend the same thing that they've been spending.
The same amount of money, pretty much.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more, because now they have time in their hands and they travel more. And generally at that age, you get grandkids coming up and you want to spoil them a little bit. And you know, a trip to Disney World ain't what it used to be.
Right. Right, and if you're the grandparents, you got to buy extra stuff, right?
You better have a checkbook when you go to Disney World.
So when you're figuring all this out, like how much money you're going to need to save and or how much to live on,
right?
You can factor in Social Security, right? We can count on that. That's going
right.
to be there.
Yeah.
So what sort of numbers how do we come to the final number?
Well, if you figure that you've got $8,000 going out a month. I'm just picking a number. You got $8,000 going out a month, and that's what's comfortable for you the way that you're living. And maybe between you and your wife, you and your husband, maybe you've got $5,000 coming in from Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a $3,000 gap there, right?
Right.
Yeah, and it's a little bit more complicated to do this. I'm just making it real simple, but there's a $3,000 gap there. Well, if we know that gap exists, how do we close it? How do we create the income that's dependable and sustainable? And you kind of touched on this a moment ago. You have to know that it's going to be there.
Social Security will increase with inflation.
Marginally. They lie.
But you've got to figure that with your own savings, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe when we do our models, when we do our planning, we figure a 1% increase in Social Security each year. Now, inflation's more than that,
right.
but the government kind of plays some tricks because they don't want to pay more money.
And we've been living in a very low inflationary time, too, so
yeah.
We're kind of getting a little complacent.
So Social Security is going to go up a little bit, but that gap might even get bigger. And Steve, this is I kind of like to make something special for our audience today. Folks, if you're sitting out there and this kind of makes sense to you, and you're 5 to 10 years from retirement and you want to get your arms wrapped around it, we're offering a complimentary, full-blown plan for retirement. It's complimentary. It's a $3,000 value. And in that, we're going to help you put together your own retirement income plan and help you plan for closing that gap.
Bill Geiger, thanks for coming by.
My pleasure,
sir.
Nice
to see you again.
Nice to be here.
Thank you very much, David Jennings. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and we thank them for that. In the studio is Dennis Rodkin, who writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. I don't know, were you listening in the green room at all, the PPG Paints green room?
I was not.
You can say no, it's okay.
I was not. I was enjoying the paint colors.
I said that you know how much I love stories about old buildings.
Oh, yeah.
And this Rostenkowski thing.
Yeah.
My parents volunteered at the soup kitchen for years, decades, at the St. Stanislaus-Kolska Church.
Oh, literally across the street
across
Rostenkowski's.
Right.
Yeah.
So I would be over there from time to time, and you would see them. Like, how could the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee live in this building? But his family owned these three buildings for, what, 100 years?
They said 100 years. The property records are not very clear, but the family told the real estate agent that they've had the three buildings which wrapped the corner there for over 100 years.
The most unassuming buildings, I mean, typical unassuming buildings in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, well, and when you talk about, you know, how could the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, here's a man, I read that early in his career, he used to drive back from Washington every weekend.
Wow.
Which, I mean, that's a drive. But eventually, you know, he's flying. He's one of the most powerful men in America at that time. And he's living at the corner of Evergreen and Noble.
At one point as a kid, he grew up in the second floor apartment, which was above his mom's bar.
Yeah, his mom ran the bar downstairs, and his dad had an insurance company. His dad was an alderman. Yeah. The office was in the building at some point.
And so these three buildings in Noble Square, it's what, Evergreen and Noble, they're up for sale now.
They're all three, yeah, they're up for sale together. It's for redevelopment. The idea is that, so one is an 8-unit building on the corner, right there at the corner of Evergreen and Noble. Immediately north is a smaller one, and immediately east is a single-family home. But they're interconnected. You can walk from the first through the second to the third, all indoors. But apparently it needs a lot of rehab just because it's been in the same family, same hands for 100 years. But the 8-unit building was filled with renters until not too long ago. And the idea is that you would buy this and they're selling all three as one sale. They're not selling the three buildings piecemeal, but rehab them. And maybe one becomes a single family. The other is eight, luxury units. And I don't know what you'd do with a third, but they're on a, you know, there. It's a really prominent corner. There's a lot of history there.
And Mrs. Rostenkowski lives in Wisconsin now.
She lives at there, which is where Dan Rostenkowski died in 2010.
Okay.
Yeah. And but she's the seller. I was talking to the real estate agents who are sort of offering it as a rehab package, and then they would help you market the apartments. And
I love that you said that they recently had an auction with political memorabilia. I wish I'd known about that.
I do too. I read about it after the fact. But the interesting thing is not everything got sold.
And some of it's still in the building.
There are, which is probably why you should buy these buildings, Steve, because you could get a couple of oil paintings of Rostenkowski.
I love that.
Apparently, the family had so much of this stuff, they said, you know what, just keep those.
Well, so you buy three buildings and we'll throw in a couple pictures of Uncle Dan, too.
Full-length oil paintings, yeah.
So I guess if you're going to market it as the Rostenkowski Estates, you put an oil painting in the lobby over the mail slots or what?
Well, it's interesting. I talked to somebody about that and they said, you know, the name doesn't really carry anymore. You'd probably call it you'd borrow on Noble Square, on Stanislaus Kostka, on Pulaski Park across the street, something like that.
Michael Flanagan Way.
Michael
Flanagan was the guy who unseated him in 94.
Yeah.
What a shocker. I was around with him, that Flanagan, at those days.
And then I think he was just a one-term.
He was.
Yeah.
And they, I think, replaced by Rod Blagojevich.
By Blagojevich, yeah.
So there you go.
And Rostenkowski.
So from prison to prison.
Right. That works.
Put that in your story.
I'll go back and re-edit it, Steve. Thanks.
Okay, so that's I love those stories, so I wanted to start with that way at time. And the other story we talk about a lot is the fact that, you know, home sales here just aren't doing well. And what, we're at 9 months in a row of downward growth?
9 months in a row when sales, in each of those months, sales were down from the year before. And that's the longest stretch of sales declines since a period that ended in a 12-month period that ended in June 2011. So it's been, we've had rising sales for the most part ever since 2011. Sales have been down now and then, but this stretch of 9 months is starting to look pretty bad.
So is it just a continuation of the same old thing, or are you saying maybe there's a sign of something new coming here?
Well, around the country, sales are starting to drop.
Okay.
So we don't yet know whether it's a sign of something bad coming. We do know, I mean, there are a lot of factors. One is that there's very little inventory on the market. In our market, one of the reasons for that is that so many people are underwater on their current house. They can't put it on the market to sell it and move to the next because they can't afford to move. But there are other reasons as well. We know there's lower demand, partly because we've had 4 years in a row of loss of population losses. People are worried about where property taxes will go. We know we assume they'll go up. We don't know by how much.
If the stock on the market is low, why is it that our median price increase is still so far below the national average increase? I mean, wouldn't that, if there aren't as many houses to buy, wouldn't that drive up the cost of the houses on sale?
if demand were steady, but it seems that demand is going down.
Because they're all underwater, too.
Because, right. And, well, and also young people aren't buying, or I'm leaving Illinois, or I'm going to rent a luxury apartment because they're so beautiful.
So is this a story, we're talking about the market in general, but is this one of those, the story that really what we're talking about are some isolated areas that are hit especially hard and other areas are doing okay?
I would say this is a story where a few areas are doing fine.
No one's booming.
No. You know, the near North Shore, the Evanston, Wilmette, Winnetka, those places are doing well. Elmhurst is doing well. In the city, we're not seeing sales declines in Bucktown and those sorts of places. But if you look at the city overall, or you look at the suburbs overall, or you look at the entire market, sales are down. We do have some bright spots, but they are, unfortunately, they are few and far between.
Now, these numbers were for April, right?
Right.
And spring is the big buying time.
Right.
Is April that, or is that still to come in May? I mean, so, like, are we putting all our chips on May here?
Well, I think we would have been if April had been the only month that declined. And homes that close in April often were put under contract in January, February, March.
Okay.
Those were colder than they usually are, but this was a pretty considerable drop. And again, it comes on the heels of eight prior months where it's down. So certainly it will be good to find out that sales pop back up in May, but I don't think I would hold my breath.
Dennis Rodkin writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. Thanks for coming by today, Dennis.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Chicago is a great city to live in because you really don't need a car since we have so many transportation options. And that means the car sharing market can get pretty competitive. GM's car sharing service Maven learned that firsthand, so they're pulling out of Chicago and eight other cities. The market has exploded in recent years, and if businesses can't keep up, the flood of competitors will eat up their market share, and that seems to be the case here. Maven will continue to operate in Detroit, LA, DC, Toronto, and a few other cities. And another thing that's being pulled back, Vienna beef hot dogs in Illinois, Wisconsin, and Indiana due to a recall. It's probably because of ketchup, isn't it? What? No, that's ridiculous. Over 2,000 pounds of Frankfurter variations were recalled because of possible metal contaminations. Stinking ketchup, always ruining foods. No, it wasn't ketchup. Cut it out. There have been no reports of illnesses or injuries yet, but as always, better safe than sorry with these recalls. Never trust ketchup. Ugh, this guy. For more information, visit your local grocer. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, we were just talking to Dennis Rodkin about the fact that home sales have been slow, and slow now for 9 months in a row, which they've been slow for years in the area. But man, retail sales are popping.
That's right.
In the studio now is Amy Guth, the host of the Daily Gist podcast. What's up with the retail sales here? And these are Chicago numbers, right? Or Chicago region numbers.
These are Chicago region numbers. And this is really interesting. So overall, retail sales in the area rose 3.5%. So we're looking at just over $127 billion. So it's up. It's not up in every category. General merchandise, like department stores.
Right.
Fewer Target runs. Fewer things like that. But food and drink, that is just the category that just keeps going, still spending strong at the supermarket. And it's really, it kind of gives way to this a couple of interesting pieces. One of them is that this new data report that's out looking at all these numbers, it really kind of paints a different picture from what we've been saying about e-commerce. And, oh, hey, it's really hurting the brick-and-mortar stores. Well, not as much.
You mean because we're spending money here anyway?
That's right. We are spending money. We're just doing it a little bit differently. And that's kind of the second piece that it points to, is how behavior changes and how landlords have to adapt to that. So things like those anchor stores that have been in malls for a long time, once we saw Carson's go and Toys R Us and some of those really big stores, we have a ton of empty anchor space, something like 15.7 million square feet of it. That's a ton of it around here. And so people are adapting. They're doing more like food-based, grocery-based, bowling alleys, things like that.
I think there was a high school moved into one in Waukegan, too, as I recall, a Jesuit school. I'm not sure about that. But here's what struck me about the categories and the numbers. If you were to ask me what area we spend our most money on, retail sales, I would not have said automotive and gas stations.
No, not at all. I wouldn't have said that either. I would have probably doubled down in that rising food and drink category.
Right. So $27.01 million, I guess it is. Oh, and $1 billion that we spent at the gas station. This must include car sales, too.
I'm not sure it does. I'd have to look.
It's kind of a weird thing to put them together, but it says automotive and filling
stations. Yeah, we need to check that. We need to do a little fact-checking, which would make sense because
they're
big tickets, and car sales are shifting more to like the SUV and the electric and the hybrid. So those are a little bit higher dollar points.
And then we go to drugstores. So we go to the CVS or the Walgreens after that. And so I should say automotive and filling stations up 5.5%. Drugstores up 2.1%, but they account for $20.5 billion in our spending. Then the restaurant industry, and then groceries.
Yeah, groceries stay strong. People are really, I think a lot of that has to do with probably an economic indicator. More people are cooking at home. People are very concerned about their health and what they're eating and things like that. So, but yeah, groceries staying strong. I think this kind of goes with the last story that you were just talking about with Dennis Rodkin about home sales. Furniture and electronics suffered a very big drop. So that's a 7.4% drop, which I guess makes sense when you look at the housing numbers.
So
people aren't moving.
Right. People aren't. But we're also spending money on experiences rather than on our house.
Right. Right.
So that explains why we go to Fogo de Chao and spend $250 and don't buy a new, ottoman for our sofa?
Right, things like that. You know, and there's a lot of those services that have popped up that for the experiential gift, like give someone a skydiving or a spa day instead of like a present of, you know, a bowl or whatever.
So I'm imagining this is coming up on the Daily Gist today?
It is. It is coming up on the Daily Gist today.
What else can we look forward to?
You know, we talked a little bit about McDonald's workers, how they're looking for some answers from McDonald's on a systemic level and a federal level about workplace violence incidents with customers mostly. We're talking about that, and also talk to Dennis Rodkin because it's Thursday, so I always have to find
out. It's Rodkin Day.
It is Rodkin Day. He's a very famous guy, especially on Thursdays in the city.
Amy Guth, the host of The Daily Gist. Check out that podcast. It's done by Crane Chicago Business in conjunction with WGN Radio. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.